Today's show is brought to you by Hearst Ranch Grass-Fed Beef, available on the internet at HearstRanch.com.
Good morning and welcome to Taste Matters with Mitchell Davis. I'm your host, Mitchell Davis. Funny how that works. And every Wednesday at 11 o'clock, we talk about taste. This Wednesday, we're talking about perhaps a new kind of taste. And I'm very excited to be able to welcome to the studio here in Bushwick, Peter Meehan. I've never called you Pete before. Funny that I just did that.
I like
on the
that.
Air.
That's cool. Thanks
Peter
for
F.
having
Meehan,
me.
I should be, I should say. The co-editor of Lucky Peach. Perhaps the most innovative, in a kind of retro kind of way, food magazine ever to be published in this country of ours.
There's nothing innovative about, I mean, it's a magazine.
Right, but what's innovative is that it's a magazine for its starters.
Right.
You started a new magazine.
I feel like we get so many points for making a magazine, even though everybody's been making magazines forever. But I'll take it. I mean, I undue credit is as good as due credit, I think.
Hey, you know, at a time when magazines like Gourmet no longer are with us, magazines we thought would never ever go away, to start a new one's pretty ballsy.
I don't know. It was a byproduct of a bunch of other ideas, and we didn't think it would. I didn't even think about the fact that we'd have to keep making it. And I was horrified and saddened when we had to make the second issue, because I'm like, oh man, that first one was so much fun. That was crazy. And then it was like, oh no, we have to do that again really fast. And now that's just the life that I live.
So now you're working on which issue of Lucky Peach?
We're I'm trying to work on 4 and 5 at the same time, but 4 is kind of the main thing that's eating my life right now.
So tell us what the goal is, what Lucky Peach is about, and what your intent to do with it.
Yeah, they're again, just like not having really comprehending what it meant to make a magazine, meaning sure. that I would have to keep making it. There was no mission statement or clear goal, and so we've had to kind of get ourselves to some sort of idea of doing some, you know, why we're doing it. And I think it's just a chance to tell stories, you know, that mm-hmm. like as a writer, I used to always pitch stories and not be able to get them in a magazine or get somebody to let me publish them somewhere. Right. And I was always, too lazy to start a website and do it. So we started a magazine to do it. And then, you know, so there's that. And it's a chance to showcase friends, whether they're chefs that, you know, Dave's friends with, or artists or writers that, you know, me or the McSweeney's guys are friends with. And and we're all, you know, big fans of food. So it's a chance to contribute to that dialogue in our own way, you know.
Let's tell everyone who Dave is, because
Dave Chang is my partner in Lucky Peach. He has a series of pan-Asian Honolulu themed restaurants called Momofuku.
Honolulu themed restaurants.
It's coconut shrimp is really what you need to get at Noodle Bar if you ever go there.
And the Mai Tais are amazing.
Exactly. So Dave has the Momofuku restaurants, and then we publish it with McSweeney's, the publishing imprint started by Dave Eggers out in San Francisco.
Okay, and so you also co-wrote Dave Chang's book,
yes,
right? Momofuku, the cookbook or something,
whatever.
And when you were doing that, did you guys be like, wow, this is fun, we should do this every month or something?
No, I mean, we kind of took a relationship break after our press tour. Uh-huh. I had a baby. I think Dave might have opened another.
Must have hurt.
You know, opened some more restaurants. And then I did a book with these guys, the Frankie's Spuntino restaurant in Brooklyn.
Book,
and then after that, you know, I guess after our little relationship break, we rekindled our love and started working together. And
we will get to the role of bromance in the food world, because
I'm trying to.
If I see another shot of Dave and Rene Redzepi riding bicycles together happily through Christiania.
I just did a story for Food and Wine in January about Daniel Patterson and Rene. And we spent 3 days together in San Francisco in February, and it was like the most glorious 70-degree February days. And the picture, it's like their wedding album. Like
there's a scene where one is feeding the other, and
yeah,
I thought to myself,
when Daniel saw the story, he's like, oh my God, what is my wife going to think of this? You know, but I think Lucky Peach gets a lot of probably appropriate static for being too bro-y and masculine, and I think that there was a aspect to, like, the first essay I did in the first issue was like a 20-page travelogue of Dave and I eating ramen in Japan and being drunk and throwing up, and I cursed like every six words. But I kind of feel like it was like a little bit of a primal yell, like, oh my God, I can't believe I get to do this, and I'm going to do this however the hell I want to. And now it's like, you know, we did in the second issues, we had stickers, and I was giving, you know, my daughter's 2 1/4 and into putting stickers on stuff.
Right.
And I gave her these stickers, and I'm like, man, I should really edit some of these stickers out, because the organic only use for, you know, wash before using for sex stuff sticker was like just questionable to give to your child.
At 2 1/4, it's probably,
you know,
okay.
But yeah. She doesn't read yet. She only right. a few letters. So.
But I do think that that's part of what the magazine is great for in adding to this conversation. I mean, you know, the other magazine we were just talking about earlier that has reinvented itself in this moment is Bon Appetit, which has gone from, you know, being more of a home cookie mom food magazine, I would say, to you know, a sexy, I mean, GQ magazine, we've had Adam on the show before.
Right.
So there's some space there between sort of what's out there and what people actually in food, passionate about food, who come here to Bushwick, want to read and see and do. And I think you really fill that void.
I guess there is maybe, you know, like not, I don't know, maybe at the dining section a little bit, but like in Bon Appetit and I guess in Lucky Peach, maybe in magazines in general, a movement from service to lifestyle, you know, or maybe there's more room for that in the discussion about food now because...
Well, more people are involved.
Right.
And
yeah, yeah. It's less, you know, like I think cooking magazines like Food and Wine and Bon Appetit used to have would address a core audience of people who just needed recipes to use at home and wanted that, and, you know, and then to be updated about what people were cooking around the world. And now there's, I think, a lot more people are buying food media or consuming food media, whatever
right.
media terminology we need to use, in order to add to, you know, the role that food's playing in their life. And I guess it's a bigger thing now.
Right. Let's talk about the recipe, because you're a great cook and I love what you're the wacky shit you're doing to recipes in Lucky Peach, like the flow charts, the whatever. I just think recipes have sort of been the same and standardized in every book and every magazine for so long, and I love that you're thinking about them differently. Can you talk
well that was that? I mean, that's really the seed of Lucky Peach, the magazine, are the recipe layouts, because Chris Ying, the editor-in-chief, who was formerly the publisher at McSweeney's, he and I worked together on an issue of the McSweeney's Quarterly called Panorama. It was a gigantic broadsheet newspaper, and there was sure. a food section that Chris put together, and he and I did a huge double page spread about ramen. It was right when the Momofuku cookbook came out, and he's like, I want to run the ramen recipe. I'm like, the ramen recipe is like 30 pages long. It's not really something you can excerpt. You know, I would let you, but, you know, it will fill your... So we met and we spent... We were going to have lunch, and then like 8 hours later, we were hammered and needed to split up. And but during that time, just kind of...
Everything's a bromance.
It was a budding bromance between Chris and I. But I was... In the course of doing that book, I had learned what ramen was from Dave, and I can be thick-skulled, and it kind of took understanding that it's a soup. You know, and that's, and then you know, you can make the most basic soup and it can kind of look like ramen, or you can add all these steps. You start with a dashi, you know, you add pork at this point, you know, there's different, you season it with a tare instead of just salt. So what we ended up doing in Panorama was having like an inside track that was a simple Asian chicken soup and an outside track that were things you could add at every step to turn it into a bowl of ramen, you know, to bridge the difference. And we loved doing that. We had a great time working together, and we had just tried to figure out a way to work together again. And it wasn't until Dave and I were working on Lucky Peach, which was supposed to be videos and an app. And the idea was that it was going to come out quarterly. And then Ying was like, well, why don't we do a quarterly magazine? And I loved that idea because I'm not a digital person. I still don't own my own iPad. I just borrow my girlfriend's. So I just liked the idea of doing something analog. And everyone thought it was going to be this terrible failure. And now... here we are with a magazine and nothing else to show for it.
But what magnitude of success? How many issues do you produce?
We're doing like 100,000-ish wow. copies of each issue now.
And, how often?
It's like, I think that we're doing, the first four will come out on a 4-month schedule, and then we'll do it every 3 months starting issue 5. You know, we knew that it would take time to kind of learn how to do this and build up the ability sure. to put it out on an actual quarterly schedule.
Sure. Let me remind people listening at home or listening to iPads that you can call and ask us questions at 718-497-2128, or you can email us at info@heritageradionetwork.com. If you're listening to an iPad, why don't you tweet us a question at Taste Matters, HRN. I'm talking with Peter Meehan, the co-editor of Lucky Peach, but also the co-writer of some great cookbooks, the Momofuku cookbook, the Frankie's Sputino. What is that book called?
It's Something Something and Something Companion.
Companion, yeah. Right. One of those long names that cookbook catalog people hate because it takes up all of the lines of the description. And also a former restaurant critic for the when the New York Times ran a wonderful under 25 column. So you scoured this town.
Back in the delightful weekly days of that column. Yeah. And before that, my first ever food writing job was writing blurbs for the Beard House calendar for Mitchell Davis. So,
oh, really? I can't wait to meet this guy, because obviously he doesn't know how to hire people. Thanks. That's fun. So what do you think, I mean, besides Chang, besides doing a magazine, like what you've now been doing food for a long time, thinking about food, eating food, probably since you were born, although not, from what I hear, not always, not what would constitute food these days. I mean, what's going on in this crazy world of ours, food-wise?
I don't know. I'm as, you know, I mean, that's one of those things when people are like, oh, Lucky Peach is part of something, like there's that New York Magazine article, and it's like, I don't know, the whole idea of wanting to be part of something is kind of right. Antithetical to trying to create something.
Very Groucho Marxian of you, yeah, right.
So I don't, but I mean, food is better, you know, restaurants are better.
Everywhere, like across the country.
All over the place, yeah. And that's, you know, so things are good. I don't know, that's the Irish Catholic summation of it. Things are fine, you know.
Things are fine. Where are you? Let's talk a little bit about how you throw it all together, because I know there's a method to what sometimes seems like madness in the actual magazine. You've done three issues. They've each had a theme that's been kind of creative, and you know, the last one was chefs and cooks, I think,
right.
Was the idea, which I love the addition of cooks there. I'm sure that's a real insider chef's perspective, that
right.
All food is not chefs. It's also cooks, mostly cooks.
Yeah, and that was important, you know, to Chris and I, and I mean, and Dave, but to like try to write about people who were cooking for their entire lives who weren't famous chefs and would probably never be famous chefs. Naomi DeGood did a great story about three women who cook on the street in Chiang Mai. I mean, like, we had, so it was like, it's important to present that balance along with, you know, Mario Battaglia and David Chang, and, you know, and I think those guys are important and influential, and, you know, they have, you know, I think they'll contributed like cool things to the magazine, but it's like having that balance maybe humanizes the profession a little bit more, you know, than just celebrating right. the famous people.
I actually, a few weeks ago, we had James Osland, the editor-in-chief of Sever magazine, on, and we had a great conversation on the air, but it got really exciting off the air on the subway ride home back into Manhattan, where he started to talk about how, you know, chefs haven't really influenced a fraction of a percentage of how people eat, that there are cooks out there who need to cook all the time and every day and work in restaurants and do whatever it is that they need to do, and those are the people that he's interested in also in his magazine, which right. is obviously yet again a different conversation than Lucky Peach, but also different from Bon Appetit and Food and Wine, for that
sure,
matter.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. Where are you from?
Chicago, the west side of Chicago, Oak Park and River Forest.
And what was food for you like then, when you were growing up?
I ate a lot of hot dogs and hamburgers at various fine Chicago hot dog and hamburger establishments. And then
some of the finest, perhaps, right, you know, at the time. Yeah, right.
And then, you know, my mom cooked like she's a little bit Italian. So there was like a red sauce that was like the best thing she cooked. There was a tuna casserole that was okay. There were various chicken preparations throughout my childhood that made me think I hated chicken until, you know, once I found out that it wasn't like a lump of breast meat in a cryovac package, that there were other possibilities to it.
I just had a conversation with a very influential food person who we're trying to get on the air, so I'm not going to jeopardize it by saying who, but trust me, everyone reads him regularly, and he thought it was time for the chicken restaurant, that something had to be done to chicken, which had been done to pork. Largely people like Dave Chang had done to pork. It was chicken. It was the time for chicken.
Chicken elevation?
Yes, exactly.
Chicken
belly, chicken bacon, I don't know, but something.
I fried chicken with Jonathan Waxman yesterday, and usually, you know, you think about frying chicken, you're like, I don't know, cut it into four pieces eight pieces, whatever. He cut a chicken into 16 pieces because he grew up on a chicken farm and he's like, oh, somebody's going to want to eat the backbone. So he just cuts the backbone into pieces and fries those up with everything else for wow. you to chew around. I don't know. He might be the chicken guy. He was the chicken guy in the 80s, right?
Of course. Absolutely.
But yeah, so I totally lost my train
of thought. No, so you were talking about tuna, passable tuna casserole.
Yeah, and then like right. I made sandwiches for myself constantly. So like deli meats, you know, yellow mustard. I was raised on Miracle Whip. I've since converted to Hellman's. And I can, you know, I'd encourage other people to take that path in life if they haven't made the transition. But no, like food wasn't central at all. It was when I moved to New York that it became, you know, an object of like obsession, and it gave me direction in an otherwise kind of directionless life that I was living. So.
Excellent. Well, we'll talk about where that direction is heading in a few minutes when we get back. Again, you're listening to Taste Matters. I'm Mitchell Davis. We're talking to Peter Meehan, and we'll be right back.
Grass-fed beef, pasture-raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
Is that Magnetic Fields? Were they here singing for Hearst Ranch? That's pretty great.
Is that from cows that are raised on that Hearst Ranch on the California coast?
No, I think they're raised at 57th Street in the Hearst Tower and 8th Avenue, somewhere on the 47th floor.
They just power the elevators in
totally.
That building.
Very sustainable.
Nice.
No. Welcome back to Taste Matters. I'm talking with Peter Meehan, the co-editor of Lucky Peach. If you have questions for him about the magazine business, about the food business, about great global chefs or where Dave Chang is right now and what he's doing, give us a call at 718-497-2128 or write us an email at info@heritageradionetwork.com. So we're direction. Well, first let's talk about the music, because you're a music guy. Actually, you came here, and I don't think that's a rolling pin in that case. I think that's a guitar or something.
Yeah.
What were we just listening to before Mr. Hearst Ranch?
Spectrophoke, that's the band I play in, and we are playing tonight in New Haven, Connecticut at a place called Bar that's supposed to have awesome pizza.
Okay, well, Connecticut pizza, music, beer, Pete Meehan, head out to New Haven. We should all head out to New Haven tonight. Food and where it's going. I mean, I know you don't want to be part of something or part of a movement or whatever, but you are these days hanging out with Chang and interviewing great chefs, Jonathan Waxman among them, Renee riding bicycles with Renee Redzepi, whatever it is. Like, what do you see? What are some trends, or what interests you, or what are the surprises for you in food out there? What are you working on, maybe in the next issue even, that you're enjoying?
Let's see. The next issue. Well, the next issue got derailed by one of Dave Chang's bad ideas. He loved this movie Diner. It's a Barry Levinson movie from 1982, a Steve Guttenberg vehicle. You may be familiar with it. He was like, it's the best movie ever, man. You got to watch. So I went home and I was like all excitedly, like bought it off of iTunes or whatever and watched it, and I hated it. And he's like, we should do the whole issue dedicated to Diner. And I was like, no way. And so he angrily tweeted that I had shut him down on his Diner idea. And this guy, Brian Koppelman, who's a screenwriter who wrote Rounders and Ocean's 13. He's like, oh, it's a great idea. Like, you should totally do that. And so I wrote back, okay, Brian, if you write an essay about, you know, because he said it was like the most meaningful movie to him. It's the reason he got into screenwriting. I'm like, if you write an essay about why you got into screenwriting, you know, I'll do 50 pages on Diner. So we're doing, you know, I did screen grabs of every piece of food that someone eats in Diner, and I'm doing a recipe from each of those. So it,
I'm going to interject here and tell a story that is related, even though it's going to sound like it's not, because I'm beginning to understand how the world works. And I was in Las Vegas at the Palazzo last week for the announcement of the James Beard Foundation Award nominees. And the strangest thing to me about that experience, and I love Las Vegas, I'm a real pro, and the food can be really amazing there, is I walked into the casino at the Palazzo and they were playing the Psychedelic Furs on the Muzak. And I thought, is everything just about when we were that age? I mean, so Diner and
I guess it's just stuck in that. So we're not doing like a, it's the American food issue. Daniel Patterson is actually kind of guest editing, and he came up with this theme, American cuisine, whatever that is. So we're trying to explore that as a theme through other essays. But the thing I've been working on is this huge package of Diner inspired recipes. So I have like a club sandwich from the Terese guys and fried chicken from Jonathan. But on the other side of it, I mean, I think it's less about actually coming to a conclusion about what American cuisine is for us than saying, okay, what's American cuisine? What aren't we talking about? What isn't there? So we have a guy doing an essay about the cuisine of like the Ojibwe tribe in Minnesota and talking about that and how that plays into it. My counterpoint to assenting to this Diner homage was I wanted to do something about this 1982-1983 video piece called Andy Warhol Eats a Hamburger, which if you've ever seen an Andy Warhol film, you know the plot of now. And I ended up talking to my friend Bob Nickus, who's a great art writer, was an editor of Art Forum for years, and he wrote an essay about Andy Warhol and pop artists and food. And it's kind of like a brilliant take on food over time. So it's like finding voices who are going to tell stories about sides of American food that just aren't maybe part of the discussion right now. And it's more interesting to me to try to find what's not there than it is to try to figure out what's at the focal point. Because you go and see Rene, and I mean, I'm blown away at what he does and his passion and the guys who work for him, but I can't say I understand the direction that's all heading in. It's past me. So
right. And we're not going to become a small Scandinavian country anytime soon. Right. So, interesting. So let's talk. I don't know. I want to talk more about American food since, you know, at the James Beard, the father, mm-hmm. the dean of American cuisine, all that kind of stuff. It's a topic that really interests us and a topic that's so hard to explain to people. You know, it's one of those things you feel like we know it, or even if we can't describe it, you know, when you're in a restaurant in America vis-a-vis one in France or Japan or whatever. But when you try to talk to someone from any of those places, they have no idea what you want to say. So, I mean, just
And I think, well, I mean, I think one of the things that we tend to do with Lucky Peach, and it could just be an editorial failing or it could be a strategy, but regardless, it's a result, is present kind of fractured pictures of things.
Of course.
And I think that the Cooks and Chefs issue, you know, you had Mario Vitale talking about, you know, being pretty, not rosy, but, you know, he sees the future of food as having, you know, there's a positive trajectory going on. And Chang, like was like, no, everything is dying.
In so, his nature, right?
Yeah, as is his right. want. But, you know, I think that's the thing with American cuisine. It's about, we think we do know American cuisine. And, you know, we could rattle off some things that are, you know, this is American, you know, maybe we could say 20 things right now that are American cuisine. But we'll inevitably leave out 50 more things that are important to pockets of America that we've never been to because it's this gigantic, gigantic place. So,
right, and because we've chosen not to eat Miracle Whip, right. Perhaps, right?
You know, or like, I didn't really know that much about Southwestern food, so we've got something about that in there. And it's, you know, it's about trying to ferret all that stuff out. I mean, it's not stories that are completely untold. I mean, all this stuff has been written about, but I don't know, maybe by bringing all that stuff together, you know, I think that's the thing is in America right now, we've got people who actually care about food. It's no longer like I had friends who treated Hannah and I, my wife, like snobs when we were 22 and into restaurants because it was kind of a snobby pursuit.
Right.
And now,
by definition.
And now right. both of them work in restaurants. One of them is too expensive for me to eat at. You know? Right. So there's been a big change. So I think that there's an enthusiasm about food. And then there's an awareness of the bounty, both in terms of like the regional cuisine that we'll be addressing in this issue, and like local products from farmers markets or foraged shit, you know, now via Renee. And so we have all this new information and we have all this enthusiasm, but how we're going to put it together into a food culture that actually could be described as American cuisine, I think, is like kind of where things are going.
And to take this to a completely different place, but related, you have a 2.5-year-old daughter.
Yes.
Hazel, what do you and Hannah feed her?
She eats like pretty much everything. There's a review in the Village Voice today of a barbecue restaurant in Queens, and the toddler who is cited as loving the lamb sausage at that restaurant is my toddler. So she'll eat, but actually, like, the thing I think she digs more than anything else right now is like steamed white rice with like Korean nori wraps, you know, like sesame rubbed seaweed. Like, she'll just sit there and wrap up balls of rice and just like eat that forever. You know, she likes weird kid things like frozen right. peas directly out of the freezer. But there's been no limitation on what we'll serve her or what she'll eat. I fed her nuts and shrimp at an early age.
Oh, really?
Pretty much abandoned to be like, are you allergic to this? No, you can eat that shrimp. Great. It's like, what?
Like teaching her to
like,
swim.
It's like, yeah, exactly. It's like, I'll throw her in the water. If she doesn't drown, she can swim. So, yeah, I took a little bit of a cavalier approach to exploring food allergies, but I haven't found any of them. So, you know, it's kind of also a game of like whatever she wants to eat, like that's what she's going to eat today, because it's just like right. trying to put food in.
Probably
the...
like dad and mom in some way. So what's next for Peter F. Meehan? I mean, obviously you have to figure out how to make this thing a system so that it doesn't take a
right.
life out of you every single time that you put out an issue. But
yeah, I think the Lucky Peach will be the central focus of things for a while to go. And we don't have we have like one of the world's worst internet websites. The fact that I said internet website shows either my age or my technical acumen.
Well, someone in the studio just referred to the Twitter. So,
I think that like getting a website and maybe like getting a little bit more like content coming out regularly, so it's not just like one big dump of 174 pages every 3 or 4 months, you know, if we have, you know, I think that'll allow us to talk about more, engage with more people that we want to cover, because even though the magazine feels overwhelmingly stuffed with stuff, you know, there's writers who are submitting stories that I don't have room for, that don't fit into the themes of the issues we're doing. So, you know, that's like the next immediate hurdle I want to get over.
Right, right. Good. Well, so if you hear that at home, if you have an article that you want to pitch to Peter Meehan, you can send it to at Lucky Peach.
Yeah, no. It's submissions at lky.ph.com.
Okay, because I know there are people out there, I'm sure you'll have hundreds more. Do you imagine, you've spent some time traveling around the country with these guys,
sure.
You were on the book tour and you've done a lot of stuff for the magazine. Anywhere you would be interested in eating, spending more time eating? We sit here in New York or in Brooklyn, which is, some people think is part of New York, and and believe there's nowhere else to go. But
yeah, I would like to go back to... I'd like to go and eat at some places in Chicago where I'm from, but when I go there, I usually just cook at my brother's house and, right. like, you know, go to a sentimental hot dog spot. So I haven't eaten out as much as I'd like to there. I'd like to go to Albuquerque. I'd like to eat in like the Southwest, because I've never done that myself. I don't know. I'm overdue for a trip to Los Angeles. Like, see, there's almost nowhere I'm not interested in going to eat except for Florida, because me and Florida are just having a tough time right now.
I'm sorry to hear that. And folks listening in Florida, don't take that personally. It's really just, Pete's thing. Well, it's really great to see you. Sometimes the benefit of this show is I get to see people I don't get to see otherwise.
I know. It's sad that we had to plan it, but it's good to get to be here together.
It's good to see you. Next week, we are going to be welcoming to people who are no strangers to a good food and great hospitality, Mark Ladner, who is the now James Beard Award nominated chef and a chef chef of Relais and Chateau restaurant called Del Posto, which many of you know. Mario Batali's name is sort of on the masthead, but he's the man who's been cooking there forever. And he's being joined by Jonathan Gushu, who's a friend from Toronto who works at a different type of Relais and Chateau property, which is a very, very fancy hotel outside of Toronto in Cambridge, Ontario. And as you can sense a theme, Relais and Chateau is doing this incredible event. And it's funny to sit here and talk to you, to Peter today. I mean, I know this is not supposed to be the end talk, but I'm adding a new point to the conversation, and that is, there are two different ends of the spectrum. There's the Relais and Chateau end, where things are really fancy, and there are tablecloths and waiters. Actually, at Langdon Hall, where Jonathan Gushu is the chef, I think they wear little booties that don't make noise when they walk around the room, and then there's Momofuku. And so we're going to explore the relationship between hospitality and service and finery and
I think
food.
The purse stool is a vastly underrated accessory to the dining experience for ladies. Yes.
Well, it makes men want to carry feel jealous that they don't have purses or envious or something to put on that stool, something legitimate anyway. So you are listening to Taste Matters. We'll be back next Wednesday. If you're listening to a podcast, please let us know. Send us a question at Taste Matters HRN, which is our Twitter, which is the Twitter handle. And remember to eat something good this week, every day. 3時間も待っていたのよ私猫と一緒に
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. 私嘘みたいな